Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Bantz.
And I'm George Affleck.
And it is time for...
Sunny Weather.
I'm fun.
I was ready for Go Canucks. Oh, right. It's the one with the ice and the puck and the sticks.
But, you know, sunny weather, sunny day, Canucks winning in their usual way. Even I know enough about what happened last night. No, that they're so Canucks.
Oh my God, so fun. It was so much fun. We lost our minds when my favorite player, Connor Garland, scored. But I want this takeaway stat for the people who don't necessarily watch hockey, right? Okay, here's your stat from game one between the Oilers and Canucks in round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs. The big cheese, the numero uno, the captain of the Oilers, the big, arguably the biggest star in the NHL, Connor McDavid, for the very first time in his entire career, did not get a shot on goal. He got an assist, but he did not get a shot on goal. And that is the first time in his illustrious career. So, yeah, there's your stat. Anyway, we got a lot to talk about.
Connor McDoner.
Ooh, Linda's not going to like that, George.
I assume.
Clearly, you're not watching Steel and Vance. You're a very busy man.
Yes. Well, how's it going?
Here's George backpedaling. I'm good. Let's get into some stuff here. What are you going to do with your ICBC rebate?
You know, $110, right? Is that everybody's getting it? Everybody?
Every driver.
How terrible of a driver you are?
Yeah.
That's BS. Give me a break. Okay, so in the private world, people who have insurance get rewarded at the end of their, say, career of life or whatever. At 65, you can start getting your money back. You can say, okay, I put in $50,000. I never had a heart attack or whatever. And you can get it back. Why can't ICBC reward me? I never get rewarded and bad drivers get rewarded. That's BS. Give me a break. I want to get $400 back. And those people who have accidents all the time should get an increase. Why? I mean, it's an obvious election ploy, but to me, the whole ICBC structure is dumb and so socialistic and BS.
I echo your sentiments. I really do. I mean, I've been driving for 40 years. I've had a grand total of 3 speeding tickets in my life.
Yeah, I have 3. Me too.
That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. I've been in 3 car accidents, all of them not my fault. 2 of the 3 rear-ended. So really super duper not my fault. Like, it frustrates me. And $110? Like, thanks for half a bag of groceries?
Yeah. Or maybe they should just sock it away and keep it for, you know, the reason they're making so much money is because they got rid of all the point of insurance. I mean,
You
can't claim anything, so it's like you have an accident. Yeah, so congratulations, you had an accident.
If you have a big accident and you get injured, there is a claim to be made. But the little claims, and let's be honest, I mean, if we're talking unspun turkey here, which we like to do, so taking the spin away, I personally know easily 10 people who screwed the system with ICBC. Was in a little fender bender, was totally fine, and went, oh my neck, and ended up with 10 grand. Like, yeah, it's for nothing.
It's those bad apples, right? They ruin it for everybody.
Like the people who are drinking at the beach when you're not supposed.
Is that a transition? Are you transitioning?
Oh wait, no. Let's do go to Park Board versus City Council here in, what was it? Is it a $300 million proposal, $300 million over 30 years, I think, to redo all the beachfront, English Bay, Sunset Beach, build it up because of, you know, rising sea waters and what have you. But also there's some Beach Avenue stuff. It's Park Board versus City Council. Anyway, long story short, City Council went, no.
No, well, because the park board's incompetent.
I mean, wanted you to say it this time.
I think that
I just wanted you to say it this time.
No trust. There's no trust for them to spend money like that, but they should be. That seawall absolutely should be taken care of, and so it's a bit of a challenge. I think that this is the city trying to show that it's time for us to take it over, make some kind of point. But the seawall needs to be fixed, and frankly. Totally. Delay, and not to mention the pool and this and that. So yeah, it's a bit of a political ploy.
But this is one of those things I ask you because I really sincerely do not know the answer and I really want to know. Why does it all have to be rolled into one big ball? Why can't we do some of it? Why can't we fix the things that are clearly in need of breaking without completely reimagining the whole corner of the universe? Like, let's fix the seawall.
Yeah,
let's build it up and fix it. And I mean, Lord knows we've rebuilt BC Play Stadium 3 times. So, you know, it's not like you have to build it perfectly the first time or we wouldn't have rebuilt that sucker 3 times and still be on the hook for how many more hundreds of millions of dollars to have the World Cup come here. So like, can't we do it in pieces? Can't it be, yes, we can do that to the seawall, but not radically change the whole area?
Yeah, I would say that the West End obviously needs fixing. If you ever walk down
there, it does.
It's just chaos and there's a bike lane, but people still think they can ride bikes down there. And it's like, what's happening? There's the pool needs to be rebuilt. And there's that parking lot down there and all these things.
Yeah, it's really weird. Fixed.
So,
and you can't get to the parking lot because you can't cross the bike lane that's taken up one of the lanes on Beach Avenue, right. Which by the way, so they want to reverse that now. That's the part of this that stays. The councilors want, city council wants to put Beach Avenue back to two-way traffic.
Mm. It is two-way traffic. It's just one lane on each way. So it's, oh, but past Denman, you mean, I think. Yeah, yeah. Well, it should be two-way there. But there's room for a bike lane and two-way roads there if you do it properly.
You were just going to take the words right out of my mouth. Way to steal my thunder. We don't talk before we do this podcast.
We should be planners. Yeah, you're right, though. Let's just take one chunk at a time. First of all, we know that the area on the northwest side of Stanley Park is seriously challenged by flooding. Every year, that area, again, and the trees are falling off the cliff. And so there needs to be an upgrade there to raise it up. The West End area from Denman to Burrard Street Bridge is just, like, terrible. It's just junk. It's no fun to walk on. There's the Kitts Point is not paved. It's not nice. It's not nice to ride a bike on.
It's goose poop.
But not paved.
Yeah.
Bike lanes. It's you know, some people like that. I don't know. I mean, when I ride a bike on rocks, it's not the greatest, especially with little kids. You know, it's scary if your little kids on that rocky surface. So
you know what?
There's chunks for sure. You're right.
There are some that might argue. And when you say this about little kids, I found as a parent riding on the gravel, like Jericho comes to mind, is when, you know, we go on the bike lane and people are like, middle-aged men in Lycra flying by me like they're in the Grand Fondo or they're Lance Armstrong or whatever. And I've got the little kid who's just taking the training wheels off and he's kind of, and once we get to the gravel, everybody has to slow down. Right. So while it's a little more, it is. So it depends, I guess, on the kind of cycle you're going for, because the people that ride their bikes through Pacific Spirit Park every day on their commute to and from UBC, who I see hundreds of them, they don't mind the gravel. Yeah. There's no pavement in there. Anyway, I digress. I like the idea of building up the seawalls so that our ocean front is protected from the king tides that eventually will become the regular tides, because we are seeing, you know, a raise in just the level of the ocean coming at us.
The entrance of control the water levels coming into the city like they have in
Venice. Amsterdam. Yeah, that's right. They have them in Venice.
We're going to have to do it eventually. We don't want Vancouver to flood. I was listening to New York Times podcast this week, The Daily. And they were talking about seawater. The sea level rising and the Arctic tide or the Atlantic tide. I forget the name of it. It's got a confusing name. And it's slowing down and potentially could stop, which would really screw up all of our weather. And you'd see frozen, you know, England would become like the northern tundra. And
it, really?
Yeah. It's like, and it's happening. And they don't know if it could if it might stop in 5 years, 10 years. But they're pretty
like
sure.
You mean the jet stream is?
Yeah, the water that it's a magical thing, really, the way the tides work on the Atlantic. But basically from the equator up to the north to basically the, you know, northern
it
Europe.
It pushes the weather.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cools it off, warms it up in the winter and cools it off in the summer. And of course, if you live in the middle of on Earth, you end up getting more storms if this slows down and this changes. So there's that. And so it's, you know, we're facing this massive dilemma of our oceans destroying us on the coasts, and we need.
Jeez, if only somebody had like alerted us to this being a possibility. Oh my God! Happy birthday, David Attenborough. He's 98.
Al Gore.
He's been saying it for. Yeah, but I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
The scientists over the politicians turned environmentalists with all the yeah, for sure. For sure.
Anyway, we're digressing from Park Board, but it's such a terrible thing that we have to adapt because we've abused our planet.
Yeah. But we do have to fix the things. It's just being smart about it, because as we've discussed so many times over the 250 odd episodes of this Unspun podcast, is all too often issues that impact in a big way become wedge issues and are used at times of political campaigning and spin, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to save everything. I mean, Vision Vancouver literally was running on the, we're the greenest, we're the bestest, we're going to save us from everything. What?
Yeah.
What?
They certainly staffed up for it.
Oh my God.
They could have just put all that money into funding and perhaps giving grants to green roofs and changing, you know, giving
the green
ability
roof
to make your home green. As
I love a green.
But you know, there are some basic things you can do in your home that are simple, and especially commercial buildings, that would reduce our greenhouse gas emissions in a city by a significant amount. The other thing would be to more trains, more rapid transit. That
really round the clock for people that don't work regular business hours. Never happening. It's not happening. It makes me crazy here.
Massive expansion would reduce our climate crisis by every. America doesn't even have like. Have you ever looked at train systems in America? They don't have any trains in America.
No. And then you go to Europe or Asia, and that's everything. And everybody uses them.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. I would take trains if I lived in Spain, you know? You just do.
And if the SkyTrain or they came to your, which eventually will, but might go very close to your home and have a station very close to your home.
100%.
Downtown, there's no way you're going to drive downtown anymore.
Ever. Well, no. No. Yeah. We are looking. When is that done, by the way? Do you know?
27. The first section, 2027. We've got a couple of years to go.
Two more years. It feels so long. It feels like the Canada line happened faster.
Yeah. And it did. Why? Because it's private public partnership. They're the private sector, in partnership with the province, have an incentive to build it as fast as possible. Because they start making money once it launches. And so they also run it really efficiently. So people complain about the Canada line and say, oh, it's so busy, so busy. Well, that's because the private sector runs it. And they go, we'll ramp it up. We'll add cars when we think the math makes sense. And we're not going to do that just because. So it's very efficient and it's very profitable. And that's, so the Canada line, though, the SkyTrain to UBC, once it gets there, it's going to be so profitable. There was a story last week about the most profitable bus lines, and the Broadway line was one of the most profitable bus lines, and certainly in Vancouver, not North America.
I feel for those businesses that have had that being built in front of them for so long and just like holding on by the skin of their teeth through so, right? You right there?
Here in 3 years.
Right. And so your area there will be complete 27. Or will they be closing up? Will they be closing up that street area and access to the street, and then be working internally?
Yeah, now they're building the stations. So they finished the boring, and the machines have been—I think they're being removed, and are they being dismantled? And then now it's really focusing on the track and the stations. The stations will be super complex. Like if you see the Cambie station, it's crazy.
Okay. What else is super? Hey, can we talk about the mayor of Delta being booted as the chair of as Metro Vancouver?
I know.
What's going on there?
He had that Achieving for Delta political party, and they won every single seat.
Yeah,
the team, and now there's obviously internal. It sounds like the mayor tried to put too much control in the mayor's office, which in Vancouver is pretty normal.
Yeah.
And that's how it works provincially. The premier's office has all the control, but it's unusual the mayor's office has a lot of control. But clearly, his counselors decided he was wresting too much control out of his office. And so they have had a backlash, and they've booted him from Metro Board. Now, for those who don't understand, there's city councils. And then if you live in the lower mainland, there's this thing called the Metro Vancouver, which is made up of all the communities in the metro area out to Langley, basically, or Alder Grove.
Right.
And so they decide on our sewers, our water, some parks, some housing, but mostly it's sewer and water. And it's the biggest budget outside the province in the whole province. So the province has a budget bigger, but Metro Vancouver's budget is massive.
Yeah.
And there's no transparency. I've talked about this before. I went to Metro Vancouver. You appoint the councillors or the mayor to the, in each city have a certain number of seats based on the size of the city.
Right.
You appoint that person, those people to the Metro board. And those people then represent your community for the region in general. But there's 90% of the meetings are in camera, which means they are not transparent. You don't get to see the minutes. You don't get to see anything.
No.
So I would go to these meetings on occasion because I wasn't appointed because obviously I was in opposition to Vancouver and they didn't want me anywhere near it. And I would, all I do is complain about things and say, why are we going in camera on this? This shouldn't be in camera. And so generally the mayor of each city is one of the appointees, all of it. And so in this case of Delta, they said, nope, you're pulling you. So clearly there's something going on there that's bigger and they are divided. It'll be interesting to see if in 2 years he'll be on his own and have to run as an independent and there'll be somebody else running for mayor for this group or what will happen. Clearly his counselors are not willing to support him anymore. And that's all of the downside of politics. If you don't have
right. And when you lose your people. I found it really quite interesting when I was reading the motion that council put forward and voted on unanimously, obviously without him, but because they have that super majority, obviously they can pass it.
Yep.
And it was like effective immediately, you're not on there and you can't use any of the city of Delta letterhead without it being approved by, and you can't, you know, no, there's like many layers of, you are now in handcuffs. Yeah. Yeah. And it looks messy.
Not a good look in politics.
No, it's not.
It's clearly when you start worrying if as a resident, if Delta, you should start worrying that what's going on here with my council? What's going on? Is this again more politics than process? What's happening here?
Yeah. So when that happens, do you just take it and then? Or is there more mess to be found here? Like, I don't know. I kind of feel like when we see something this big publicly, it's like, wow, that's crisis managed already. Like, what is actually happening?
Yeah, I would say that if the journalists in this region are probably going to be paying a close attention to Delta for the next while, because
I am
clearly something's going on there. And we'll see if they can get it under control and how he's going to behave after this. He already managed to get himself to stay as Metro Chair till July 1st. I think he got that approved because he wanted to wrap up his things. But this is a big deal. He's also the chair of Metro. I think I forgot to mention that.
Yeah,
so chair. He's head of Metro.
Yeah.
And that is very
powerful.
Yeah. And a lot of extra money too, by the way.
Hey, I got a bunch of other things I want to ask you about. Decrim's back on. The feds came through. Only took 10 days for the federal government to go, okay.
To prove what the province is doing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So now it is recriminalized to use illicit drugs in public places and spaces. And police are apparently going to be trained as to what that means. You're still allowed to carry your personal use illicit drugs, but you're not allowed to use those drugs in a public place.
Makes sense, right?
And also in hospitals.
Yeah. Duh. It's a duh. You know, come on. I mean, I can't sit and have a beer in a public place wandering around the city either. Why?
I think that's what changed it.
Why can I do heroin, but I can't have a glass of wine on a street in a park?
Well, and people will say, just like every time I say, why can't I have a cider at the beach? And people are like, oh my God, that's drinking and driving. How is that different than sitting on the patio across the street at an establishment that's licensed?
We're all grown ups here.
Same. I know. It's just so bizarre where people, when they want to fight and where common sense is lost. And I think that the real kicker here was more about you can't smoke a cigarette because secondhand smoke affects others, but you can smoke meth. Like that secondhand smoke won't, like, I don't. I know what the people who are championing decrim are trying to achieve, but those have to acknowledge the unintended consequences that we've seen happen here. No one could have imagined, like, just the embracing of complete, you know, use everywhere. It's quite something. I born and raised here, and I've never been a prude about it. And I understand the people that struggle with addiction. I don't want anybody to die. I'm not judging people for having come from a life situation that might have, you know, seen them delivered into a life of addiction. Like, I want help for people. I don't want forced help. I want help for. And in the meantime, we need to try and keep people alive. What does that look like? Yeah. Decrim sounded like a good idea when the scientists, it seemed, were saying we need to stop people using alone was the biggie, right? So people would not have that stigma. Or if you were a construction worker who got injured on the job and was given opioids by your physician, and then your physician cut you off, so you are addicted, so you move to street drugs, and you're embarrassed and your family doesn't know about it, so you're using it alone in your home, and you're afraid if you reach out for help, you're going to get, you know, arrested for buying illicit drugs off the street. Like, those things I understand, but how do you get there without it being, you know, now you're every doorway and building across the province has somebody sitting in it smoking a pipe of some sort or injecting themselves with something. Like, it's what? And you don't know if people are dead or not. Like, they're literally people frozen in time in places. Like, what do we do? There wasn't that long ago, George, I would have gone up and said, are you okay? And now I don't know what to do. Like, it,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's and it starts with the doctors prescribing too much of these medications, yeah, and not dealing with pain properly. And that these people, these guys who hurt themselves or whoever they are, who start these pain medications to have, there's not another way. There's no, you know, you can't get chiropractic or other kinds of physical therapy for a certain period of time. Maybe you can't, no. You know, it depends, yeah, on the scenario, and it's very complicated to get. And, you know, it just goes on and on and on. I think that if you were to loosen up and say, let's put some attention to taking care of people who injure themselves, first of all, and let's not prescribe drugs to hide the pain and then cut them off when they go, well, you shouldn't be still taking that drug. Let's cut that off. And the guy's, well, what am I? I'm still in pain. And now, of course, they're addicted. And so then their addiction is a whole other ball game, as we
and all don't have a doctor.
Yeah, yeah, I'll go to TELUS and try to get, you know, my doctor there to give me whatever I need. So it's just this whole cavalcade of problems that we have. And then, of course, drugs are expensive as well, you know, so it's cheaper to go buy crack than it is to buy pain medication.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a hot mess. And we've talked about it almost weekly for 5 years. It's wild. We're going to continue to talk about it, I'm sure. But the feds have now recriminalized it. That's the message today. The spin taking out of it is that there should be a reduced number of people openly using illicit drugs across British Columbia, and especially not in places where there are vulnerable people, like in hospitals.
My neighborhood you've seen a transformation in the last few weeks. First of all, that safe injection site that was built badly and not properly managed.
That was,
and then right across from a park, you know, the children's play park, and this introduction to reverse this decrim, and you've seen a marked improvement in Yale Town over the last couple of weeks.
One more headline to get to with just a couple of minutes to go here. The Niger suspects being arrested, like, worldwide gang violence. Young people, like 22-year-olds from Edmonton, who were used to allegedly come here and commit an assassination.
But who called the hit? That's the question. It wasn't the prime minister. He thinks it's coming from the government.
Indian government.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is the...
Those are some big...
We have these guys in jail. Will we learn who told them to kill this guy? Like, right. Who's the person that paid you?
And who else might be, right? Well, there's that. Do you think they'll talk? I mean, gang members typically don't.
I don't know what goes on behind the scenes when you have this kind of these people kind of arrested, but I imagine the amount of interrogation that they're getting is significant and exhaustive, literally. You can imagine that people can tell you all sorts of things if you put them through the right process. So it depends on who's doing the interrogations and asking the questions, and
that's scary.
Get to the fact that they can do the charge and put them into court and all that stuff.
And will there be more? Ugh. Last topic I think is much lighter. Canada Post losses. Did you hear about this story yesterday?
Yeah.
Like, can't make it to the end of the month, maybe? Like,
well, wow. But then meanwhile, Amazon seems just fine. Thanks very much. So right. They've got their own delivery systems. They don't use Canada Post. There's a brief period where Canada Post was benefiting from all this home delivery because they were getting for stuff contracted. Sure. That stopped when Amazon and everybody started figuring out their own ways of delivering stuff. So, you know, it's one of those things that you have to ask yourself, you know, if you believe in, say, the CBC, you believe in mandated flight paths, flight locations for airlines in Canada, you believe as a massive country, there are some things that the taxpayers just have to underwrite in order for us to stay connected. And postal service is one of them.
Is one of them.
Media, and not just CBC, but the funding that the community papers are getting now, people are really not happy about that. But these newspapers in these small towns across Canada are going out of business and nobody is covering, picking up the slack. So yeah. Journalism is important for democracy and keeping our country connected and all these things. So you have to ask yourself on the certain things like healthcare, what are the things that we all as a society are willing to contribute to? And is Canada Post one of them, or should we just let it go and let the private sector figure that out?
I don't know.
It could feel like the airlines where you're, okay, if you're going to be a private sector doing it, you have to deliver once a week to Nowheresville, Saskatchewan.
Right. And you have to, you know, there's no like, lost it. Sorry, I don't know where your CRA check, you know, refund is.
Yeah. We live in a social democracy. We live in a society in Canada where we balance good old market-driven policies, but also take care of our people. We generally do. And so you have to keep that in mind when it comes to Canada Post and anything, when in order to keep our country connected, and especially with what's going on in the States and the chaos down there and the division. And there's concern that we might see more of that, and it'll infiltrate Canada. You certainly have seen a bit of it. But I think the best way to keep us united is to support the things that would have a significant impact if lost as a country as a whole.
Right. Going back to our top story on today's podcast, the game on the ice with the puck and the stick, that hockey thing.
You lost me.
I'm going to pull you in. Go Canucks, go. Viewing parties and the... I mean, you're engaged enough in the news cycle to have remembered the riots in 94 and the riots in 2011. And
I was at the riots in 94. I was there. We were covering at CBT.
There you go.
Broadcast there.
And I was trapped in the riots in 2011. I was doing the post-game show for CBC's Hockey Night in Canada, that cup run in 2011. I got home at 5:30 in the morning because I couldn't get out of downtown. Couldn't even walk home. Wasn't a long walk. My car was trapped in the middle of it all. It was crazy.
But walked down to my place where
I should have.
Three blocks away from there.
I ended up staying at the Sutton Place Hotel with a bunch of people from Toronto. My Sportsnet peeps called me up and said, "You're coming here." So the media bus took us all the way around. Anyway, I digress.
We'll talk to I know somebody at City Hall, a senior person at City Hall, and
yeah.
The playbook that we created after when I was in council in 2011 is being followed to a T right now. So
is it?
Yeah, so they're not straying from that playbook that was written after 2011. So it they're committed to that process and not to fall trap to the impulse of having a big party without a proper process.
So in that, it's okay, everybody can go to Rogers Arena and watch it in there at the away games, and then at the home games we get it away from the downtown core, so it's not a spilling out situation. Because I'm hearing that in round two, if the Canucks make it to the third round, there will be a viewing party, ticketed but not expensive, at the P&E outdoors, which will contain. Right. That's where you contain a large group of people, as opposed to having them, everybody running through the downtown core, which is very hard to, you know, chase after the ants when they're running down every. It was like watching an ant farm. In 2011.
Also stop trains coming into the city at a certain point. So as the games progressed, they'll not allow the sky trains or any trains into the city at all.
Right. So remember in 2011, like every ferry was packed with busloads of people who weren't going to the game, but just coming to town with no plans on how to get out.
We grew up, I grew up in the suburbs, right? I grew up in Langley. And yeah. This is pre-internet, but if somebody was holding a party somewhere, somehow you'd find out about it. And it got almost always out of control. All these people would just start showing up and it'd be a house wrecker. Yeah. Like these poor kids were having a little party. Suddenly some word got out some magical way. How did we communicate back then?
How did we communicate, man?
But we found out about these parties and we went to them. And that's what the Canucks, and that was like, oh, we got to go into the city. We got to go there. That's where the party is. That's right.
Crazy. That's why I don't leave my 16-year-old home alone, because he probably wouldn't have a party, but he would have a couple friends over that would turn into 50. So it's like, no, we're not doing that. Anyway, where can we find you? You are on your social media at George Affleck, at George _ Affleck. I'm at Jody Vance, Jody with a Y, at Jody Vance on all of the things. See you next week, George.
Bye-bye.